Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. Welcome to the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Dale Brick. Dale is based at the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard Law School. She was previously the Deputy Secretary for Energy and Environment for the state of New York. And before that, she had a long career at the Natural Resources Defense Council. I want to tell you just a little bit more about Dale, though, because she's had quite a career. She has two decades of experience developing and implementing climate, energy efficiency, renewable energy, and clean transportation policies. Dale helps states and cities craft policies to deliver a just and equitable transition to a clean energy economy. She served as New York State's Deputy Secretary for Energy and Environment. That was from 2019 to 2020 and oversaw New York's nation-leading climate agenda, as well as directing the agencies and authorities responsible for developing and implementing the state policies and initiatives needed to build a just and sustainable clean energy economy. And we are right now, as news continues to come out and change on a daily, hourly basis, confronting what could be some very big challenges, not only to New York State and its climate policies and laws and regulations, but the entire country. Of course, Lee Zeldin, the head of the EPA, has come out this week and announced that he wants to do away with many of the foundational rules of climate that we'd have agreed on, the Good Neighbor Rule, for example. And why we've asked Dale here today has to do with something even more insidious. But first, after that introduction, welcome to the Capital Connection, Dale Brick. I'm delighted to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me and for covering this important topic.
It certainly is an important topic. And why don't we just take it from the article that prompted me to try to find you to talk about this issue, which came in the New York Times. The headline, Climate Nonprofit Sues EPA Over Billions in Frozen Funds. In a lawsuit, Climate United claims the EPA is illegally withholding funds that have become a target of the Trump administration. And if I understand this right, Dale, this was previous legislation signed by President Biden. It had to do with the Inflation Reduction Act. And these were grants that were applied for, and the monies were received, and the monies were allocated. And now the bank account has been frozen. Subsequently, Climate United sued the EPA. And so that's where we stand there. Can you give us a précis on all of this? And, you know, specifically, obviously, the Capital Connection, the impact on New York.
Yes, I'd be happy to. So you're correct. This is part of the Inflation Reduction Act. There was a provision within that act called the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. It's a $27 billion program, and it was developed by EPA. So Congress designated EPA to design a program to help finance clean energy technologies across the economy, across the country. And so EPA developed this program. They put out an RFP. Many people applied to be the implementers of this program. And we can go through the details because the program has three different parts to it. And there are many grantees. And actually, the three largest are all suing EPA now because of the frozen funds at Citibank. And what EPA did, which is a very normal process for the Treasury Department, but not something that EPA has done before because they're not usually tasked with something of this scale in terms of distributing dollars. Citibank is acting as a fiscal agent. So they don't really have a discretionary role here, but they are holding on to the dollars. And when Administrator Zeldin decided that he didn't like this program and wanted to get a hold of this $27 billion fund, the FBI sent a letter to Citibank directing them to freeze the funds. And so, which has just been disclosed in the court proceeding. There was actually a hearing on this yesterday.
And so am I right,
Citibank,
Dale? Excuse me. That had to do with checking the applications or the grant applications for DEI?
Well, it doesn't surprise me that that's what's happening, because that is happening across the board with
Yeah.
all of the funds. And, doing things like eliminating adders, if you're serving a disadvantaged community. And there certainly is a requirement across the board for 40% of dollars to benefit disadvantaged communities. That was the Justice 40 initiative that was part of the Biden administration. But these things are embedded in contracts. People have signed contracts. And so a larger question here is, is this a country that operates under the rule of law, and a signed contract is valid, or the administrator can just do whatever they want, regardless of what is stated in a contract. So that's part of what's at issue here. And of course, what's at issue are, all of the benefits that these dollars were designed to deliver to Americans, including New Yorkers. So we can jump into the details of what is a green bank, what is this money intended to do, and how is this program all designed in the first place. So the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund has three parts. One is the National Clean Investment Fund. That's where Climate United and two other of the larger players, Coalition for Green Capital and Power Forward, those are the three winners of that large amount of money. So that's where the opportunity to make very large loans to support clean energy investments. And you can see some of the investments that these organizations have already made. There was a very large solar project with the University of Arkansas that Climate United did. They've put out a $250 million facility to provide low interest loans for electrifying truck fleets and getting all of that dirty diesel pollution out of our neighborhoods. There's also community funds for small community projects. Both Coalition for Green Capital and Climate United have. And you can imagine the kinds of projects that communities want to have, like solar plus storage and community facilities. So when there are these giant storms and the power is out, people have a place to go for whether it's cooling or heating, depending on what kind of storm you're having, and just basic necessities. So that's the largest $14 billion fund. Then there's the Community Clean Energy Accelerator, which is a $6 billion fund. And that money is flowing through six different organizations, which are essentially associations of community banks. And I think of that program as sort of a thousand flowers. That money is going to flow to many, many community banks, credit unions. They can each get a $10 million grant. And that's to help really every bank become a green bank so that everybody's community bank knows what they're talking about and is able to help their customers invest in, like when you're doing a home improvement loan, you might want to have super energy efficient windows and heating systems or clean electric heat pumps. And this technologies will not be foreign to your bank. They'll be able to provide you a loan at the best rate with those dollars. And then the last piece of this program, which is not really at issue in this controversy that we're discussing, is the Solar for All program, but it is part of the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. And that's a $7 billion program that went to 60 grantees, many of them states and cities. New York is a beneficiary of that grant, where NYSERDA is getting the funds. And that's to support residential solar in disadvantaged communities. So those are the three tranches of funding. And we can get into more details about how that money would come to New York and benefit New Yorkers.
Yeah, we should disclose that Dale Brick was appointed as a board member of NYSERDA by Governor Hochul back in 24 in June. The issue of New York's funding through the Green Bank, is that threatened now, or are we protected in New York?
Well, and I'll just say I'm speaking in my personal capacity in my
Sure.
position at Harvard and not in my capacity as a board member, but all of the ultimate beneficiaries of these funds are vulnerable, because if the funds are never released from Citibank, they will never flow to our state and local green banks or to anyone else, and we'll never get all of these benefits. So yes, we're all at risk. I mean, New York has two green banks. We have the New York Green Bank, which is the state level bank, and we have NYSEG, the New York City Energy Efficiency Corporation, which is our New York City green bank. And they're both, going concerns, doing lots of great work, and they'll keep going regardless. But they might not get the boost of resources that would enable us to get more investment in clean, affordable housing, more investment in solar and, community community solar, which is a way of developing solar projects so that people who can't put solar on their own roof, like you're a renter or for whatever reason your roof is not suitable for solar, you can tap into a community solar project and get all the benefits of your neighbors who have actually solar on their roof. So those kinds of things that our green banks are already investing in, these greenhouse gas reduction fund dollars will just enable us to do more of those things. But some of the money is not flowing to green banks. For example, some of the Climate United funds, their plan is to flow dollars through housing finance agencies because those agencies are already in the business of financing new construction for new, more affordable housing or renovating existing affordable housing. So the opportunity there is, you know, if you can fold in a layer of very low cost financing, you can afford to make those units better, put heat pumps. That means air conditioning in everybody's house, which is more and more important as our weather's getting hotter and hotter and literally saving people's lives. And of course, better air quality, more comfortable houses, and the like. So that's a flow of dollars that New York can also look forward to. And of course, we do have the Solar for All money, although that money was also frozen for a bit by EPA before the states themselves brought a lawsuit to free up the funds. And, you know, there are other dollars as well that are not part of the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, like home energy rebate money, $9 billion at DOE, which was also frozen for a time. And that's just, you know, what it says, home energy rebate money for efficiency and electrification of our homes.
We're speaking with Dale Brick. Dale is based at the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard Law School. She was previously the Deputy Secretary for Energy and Environment for the state of New York. Before that, she had a long career at the Natural Resources Defense Council, a national environmental advocacy organization. We're talking today about the lawsuit that was filed by Climate United against the EPA over freezing these funds that are dispersed throughout the country to various states, including New York. And, you know, this is even worse personally for many people in the environmental movement, right? So people who work for these coalitions and organizations that have the funding frozen can't get paid. So in some ways, we could see the dismantling or the laying off or even the crumbling of organizations originally set up to help with climate issues.
Well, this is exactly what was at issue in yesterday's hearing in federal court, where Climate United is seeking a temporary restraining order that would essentially have the judge direct Citibank to release the funds. And their argument to the court is when they run out of money, which is momentarily, they will not be able to pay their staff. They will lose staff. They spent a lot of time seeking out the most qualified people to execute these loans and negotiate deals and find all the opportunities that I was just describing. And if they lose them, they may not be able to hire them back, even if they get the money, you know, next week or in 6 weeks from now or whatever. And then on the business side, you know, they have contracts with the people that they're going to provide loans to. And if they are unable to fulfill those contracts, who's going to have confidence to do business with them in the future? So their argument to the court is they are facing irreparable harm if these dollars don't flow, because they're only allowed to draw down from the bank the funds that they need for the next 14 days.
Yeah.
And that's a, you know, part of the control mechanism that was developed by EPA in the first instance of how they would distribute these funds in a prudent way, which all made sense at the time. But now, of course, Climate United is facing that jeopardy. And as you say, all the people who work for them as well, and for all of the grantees, not only for Climate United.
It really seems like the apple cart has been tipped over and the apple cart set on fire itself. The issues here are striking when you look at all the progress in many ways that has been made on understanding that the earth is heating up and that humans have caused much of this through fossil fuels and our attempts to try to mitigate that. Now you see the head of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, who, of course, is a former Long Island congressman and ran for governor of New York against Kathy Hochul, got quite a few votes. And we certainly saw where the presidential election has gone. As a lawyer, Dale, you know, you look at this situation and you see these cases. Are you a bit befuddled? I mean, are you worried that a case like this that seems so cut and dry, there's a contract? First of all, it was signed into law. There are contracts, there's money that's been allocated, that this will be ruled in your favor.
Yeah, well, I think there's two issues here. One as a lawyer and one as a human being. And I think, as a lawyer, yes. And Citibank has said very clearly if they are directed by a federal court order, they will comply with that court order. But I do think that is a concern that, do we operate in this country under the rule of law or not? And are signed contracts going to be adhered to, and are court orders going to be adhered to? So that is that issue in this case. As a human being, I think just the most important thing is that you're covering this and your listeners are understanding, what is that issue for us? What are the benefits that we stand to gain from not just these dollars, but all of the dollars that are investing in clean energy, and the policies and programs at the state, local, and federal level that are moving us towards clean energy and, better health, more comfortable living, and that we can do this in a cost-effective way, because part of what we're not doing is spending money on other things. The history of our energy bills is not that they go down, 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 down. So it's not like clean energy has to be more expensive than dirty energy. We just have to have a transition in a smart way and think about how policies, as well as direct investments, shape what the costs are for the energy that we pay for. So we can, this is a long transition, and we can benefit from it in many ways, not least the lungs of our children, but also, as I was saying, just the comfort and quality of life, walking down the street and not having diesel fumes pumped into your mouth, and having every single person having air conditioning in their house. I mean, people do die because they don't have these basic necessities.
Yeah, it is an issue of life and death for sure. A reminder that we're speaking with Dale Brick. Dale is based at the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard Law School. She previously worked in state government here in New York and for the NRDC, a national environmental group. And she joins us on the Capital Connection this week. I'm David Giustina. The idea that we are now looking at an environmental protection agency that has decided that environmental protection, its very goal, its very mission, is not going to be part of the mission anymore. You had Lee Zeldin get up there yesterday, and nowhere in this video that he released, and I'm reading now from the New York Times, did he refer to protecting the environment or public health, twin tenets that have guided the agency since its founding in 1970. It would get rid of the good neighbor rule that requires states to address their own pollution when it's carried by winds into neighboring states. And it would eliminate enforcement efforts that prioritize the protection of poor and minority communities, which you just referred to, Dale. In addition, when the agency creates environmental policy, it would no longer consider the cost to society from wildfires, droughts, storms, and other disasters that may be worse by pollution connected to that policy. And if I may be allowed, in his video, Mr. Zeldin derisively referred to the legal underpinning as the holy grail of the climate change religion. Now, I thought the whole time here we were dealing with science, Dale, and that the scientists have told us that we are heating up the earth and we need to do things to mitigate it. We literally have the head of the Environmental Protection Agency calling it a religion. Any thoughts?
Yes, well, the wonderful thing about science is that it's true, whether you believe it or not. So I think science will out. And certainly there'll be litigation over all of those proposed rollbacks of environmental and public health protections. And again, I think, it's very important for people to understand what these laws have been protecting them from, and the benefits that many of us just take for granted, that you can walk out on the street and breathe, and you're not going to become ill just from living in your town because of the air quality or the water quality. We can drink our water. We can eat the food that's on our plates. I mean, the idea of all of these rollbacks is beyond the list that Administrator Zeldin, laid out yesterday, just from all of the mass firings of people who protect us from harm. And that is why we have government. And what we want government to do for us is to keep poison out of our children's food and out of our air. And we want to be able to drink clean water. And we don't want any of those things to be at risk. And the notion that putting them at risk is somehow going to lower our energy bills is ludicrous, because, as I said, The history of our energy bills is not that they go down because we allow more pollution to happen. And in fact, cleaner sources of energy have become more cost competitive. That is part of what's happening here. The market itself is putting fossil fuels out of business. So in some of these cases, the government is actually proposing something that will increase the cost of energy bills if we're keeping facilities online that are actually more expensive.
Yeah, well, maybe you should talk to some of the Republican lawmakers here in New York. The minority leaders in both the Senate and the Assembly, I talked to both of them. They have the argument that, you start putting all this climate stuff, it's going to come back to the consumer. They're going to pay more out of their pockets. That's their argument to stop movement in that direction. They make it very clearly. Then there's another one that it sort of mystifies me, and I've let them know I feel this way in these programs. But they say, New York is only 0.02% of their emissions is responsible for the world's global temperature. Wait a minute. The good neighbor rule. What happened to New York being a benchmark for the world and doing everything the right way to have the best quality legislation we can to protect the environment? When it comes to that, they say, no, New York's not responsible. So we shouldn't even be bothered doing anything.
Right. So, first of all, I don't want to sugarcoat the idea that some new technologies have higher cost. There is a cost to transitioning to new things, but you can do it in a smart way over time and protect customers and have a net enormous economic benefit to individuals and to the economy as a whole in the state. And because you're doing things like, for example, we're insulating ourselves from the volatility of fossil fuel prices, which are global, which we have very little ability to impact. So just think about how heating bills spike in the winter when something is happening, like a war in Ukraine, and gas prices go through the roof. If we're heating our homes with renewable electricity that's based in New York that has no fuel cost, that we'll never have a spike like that again. If we're powering our cars with renewable electricity that's generated in New York, we'll never have a gas price spike again. We will be insulated from those and we'll have much steadier and ultimately much lower costs for, our transportation. So there are costs to a transition, and that's part of why we need things like low cost financing and policy. But can we do that? Yes, we can. What is the point of New York taking action for global problems? We're taking action that benefits us. We're not a martyr. We want all of those benefits first. There are advantages. You have to be willing to put in the time and energy, and that has a cost of devoting staff time and the like. But there are benefits to being the first actor by pulling industries into your state because you're the one that's going to lead the charge of launching new industries like the offshore wind industry. So we can have huge, huge benefits. Just think about the jobs. I think about the jobs associated with leading the charge on electrifying buildings. If we need to put plumbers and electricians and contractors helping every building be better, be more comfortable, be more energy efficient. That's hundreds of thousands of jobs. And keeping all of our energy dollars in our local economy, paying for our neighbors to do that work instead of sending dollars, billions of dollars out of state to import fossil fuels every year. So those are the kind of calculations that I think every state needs to be making when they're thinking about what kind of policies and investments they want to drive in the energy arena.
Dale Brick, what should New Yorkers be doing if they're not happy with what's happening?
Well, on the federal front, they should certainly be calling their congresspeople. I understand that many congresspeople's phones are ringing off the hook. Now I'm dating myself. No one has a hook on their phone anymore. But I think you know what I mean. Because people are starting to see the impacts in their real life. People know people who are losing their jobs, and they're seeing the protections that they're losing, and they don't like that. And for this specific issue of an investment that Congress Congress passed a law, EPA designed a program, they selected these grantees to deliver these benefits to us, and we'd like to have them. That's a message that every congressperson could hear.
Well, my last thought is, what happens when a lot of this stuff gets to the Supreme Court?
Yes, that's a big question.
Not a happy one, I'm guessing, either, despite our laughter there.
Yes.
She is Dale Brick. Dale is based at the Environmental and Energy Law Program at Harvard Law School. She was previously the Deputy Secretary for Energy and Environment for the state of New York, and before that, a long career at the Natural Resources Defense Council. I know what it took to get you here and to get this thing recorded, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to talk about this important issue.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.